first ever job. Oh my goodness, my first ever job. I was 16 years old and I took a full-time job working in a garment factory making linings for leather coats.
Oh, wow.
That first job came moments after I dropped out of high school at the end of my sophomore year of high school. I was not a very good student in high school. In elementary school, I was really off again, on again. I had moments of doing really well and moments of doing terribly. Spent most of fourth grade in the hall. So by the time I got to junior high school, I was kind of iffy about school anyway. Once again, things were kind of off again, on again. And high school, I felt bored. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just really boring. And my performance was unpredictable, so it wasn't rewarding. Mm-hmm. And things weren't great at home either. Part of it was fleeing not good things at home. And so I decided I would quit school and go to work full time. And at 17, I moved out of my parents' house and I have been on my own and independent since then. I went to the community college in my home county, which is Fulton County in New York State, and asked them if they would allow a student to attend, because as we know, community college is all open admission, but would they allow a student to attend that hadn't graduated from high school? And much to my shock, and to a certain extent consternation, they said yes. And in the consternation part was, frankly, I went to ask because my father insisted that I could go to community college, and I told him he was absolutely wrong, and I went to prove him wrong.
Ah, uh-huh.
Okay, so, you know, full disclosure here. adolescence, the things that
That's
we do.
Right.
But anyway, So I went to community college for a year, and frankly, when I started, I had taken a GED because I knew that I could either, at that time, this was in 1973, yep, at that time, you could either get a GED and then go to community college or go to community college for two semesters and have a C average or higher, and New York State would send you an equivalency diploma. The thinking being, if you can do your freshman year of college and you can at least get a C or higher,
right,
that you've mastered the basics of, you know, skill that you would need to graduate from high school at that time. It's all different now. But I decided to do the GED beforehand. In part, I was pretty nervous. I really thought that I would flunk out. I was terrified that I was going to flunk out. That's really how I started college. So anybody that knows me well knows I'm an extrovert, and the only thing that I enjoyed about school was the social life. And I was very active in school, ironically.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was the captain of my cheerleading team.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I was very active because I'm very gregarious.
Sure.
It's just my nature. So that part of college, I could walk in the door and make conversation with people. And of course, you had to. No cell phones then. In fact, I didn't know many college students that had a phone.
Right.
You had to figure it out while you were at school if you were going to have a social life with your classmates.
Interesting.
So I went that first year and had some teachers that took an interest in me and were encouraging, and that really helped a lot. I did way better than I thought I would do, and that was also with some serious skill deficits. For me, the best motivation to go to college was having a boring job. And being surrounded, I was the only young person any place that I ever worked as a seamstress. It was all ladies old enough to be my mother or my grandmother. And they made, most of them made minimum wage. They had no retirement. Their bosses were all men. And they, in most places, they weren't, the seamstresses weren't treated very well by management. In fact, sometimes deplorably. There are very few jobs I've ever had in my life, if any, other than my recent adult life, but as a young person, where I wasn't sexually harassed, and that was accepted behavior at that point in time. And of course, I was the only young person. Mm-hmm. In most places. And then, when a really important thing happened, there was an older lady that I worked with that I really, really liked, old enough to be my great-grandmother, even. She was 74 years old. She was still working full-time, and she was still working full-time because in her 30s, her mom fell ill and could no longer work. Her dad died, and all of her older siblings were married and no longer lived home. And so at 14, she quit school and went to work full-time to support her mother and take care of her mother. So she, when I knew her, she had been working in the garment industry for minimum wage for 60 years. And she retired after I had been working there probably a year and a half. And I really liked her. She was losing her vision. And so I we worked on an assembly line, and she worked up the line for me on the other side. So I was facing her, but quite a ways away from each other. We had worked out a signal system so she could let me know when the thread broke on her machine, because she couldn't see it to thread the needle anymore. And I would create a ruse to go for a walk and stop your machine and thread the needle. So, I had this really special kind of sweet friendship with her. And she announced that she was going to retire at 74, and the company decided they weren't going to do anything for her. So the women, we all pooled in some money and made a luncheon in our half-hour lunch break. And chipped in for a gift for her and so on, and we had a party for her. And for me, this was just this shocking thing that this woman has worked here 60 years, and not only does she not have any retirement and will have some piddling poverty level Social Security, but that after working for the same company for 60 years, they didn't give her a gift. They didn't so much as a how do you do. I mean, it was a really pretty eye-opening for somebody 19 years old.
Sure.
So that was the motivation, Mabel. When I started, I wanted an associate's degree in early childhood education because I wanted to teach preschool. I've always really loved little kids, still do, still really enjoy them. My thinking at that time was that I needed to think of a job that I could do with just a 2-year degree that I would like to do, because I couldn't imagine where I would get the money to go for more years of school. And so originally that was my thinking. And in fact, I left the local community college in my county and went to what was then Auburn Community College, the next county over, which was my first foray into the Finger Lakes. I went there because they had a degree in early childhood ed. In fact, I almost came here because they had on the books an early childhood ed program because it was their plan to offer one, and then it never got off the ground. So when I contacted them, so it was actually in the catalog, but they weren't running the program yet.
Boy.
Yeah, oops.
What?
this was in 1973. Yeah, it was in 1973. And so I went to Auburn instead, and that year was transformative. That was the year that things really happened. I got my sea legs a little bit about how to learn more effectively, because when I started college, I really didn't know. I really didn't know anything about preparing for exams or writing papers. And I learned years later. I didn't know then. I didn't find out till a long time later. But I'm mildly dyslexic. I have attention deficit disorder. I have a generalized anxiety disorder, which is a major anxiety disorder, and then this quirky auditory processing thing. So I had all these things going on that I didn't know were tripping me. and making certain tasks difficult to master and produce high quality consistently. So that first year, I was still tripping more. Mm-hmm. So I'd get a good test performance and then a bad one, or a really good one and then a mediocre one. And it's like, I prepared the same. What am I, you know? And some of it was, I was preparing the same, not appreciating that different kinds of exams, you have to prepare differently. Mm-hmm. So some of it was subtlety and sophistication about, you know, knowing myself as a learner and knowing what the options are. But some of it was what an anxious person I am, and that the combination of things that I have, anxiety and ADHD, really play off each other. So that if you make a mistake because of ADHD, then your anxiety goes up, and then you make more mistakes.
They're so intertwined.
So I hadn't figured any of that out. I'm studying psychology, though, and I'm starting to get a hint about how anxious I am. And that maybe there's something going on in that arena. And that was helpful to me, to even just use the very low-level bit of information about what you do for anxiety that's in a first, you know, an undergrad textbook at the two-year level. That was an influence. I think that's true for everybody that studies psychology. They have some personal stake in it. You know, the first year I was still stumbling, but I did way better than I thought. I made the dean's list the second semester, and that was a shock to me. And then the second year, a couple things happened. I have an older sister who's always been academically just spot on. She had other things in her life that tugged at her and pulled her away from college. Probably because we're first-generation college students, that was part of it. My parents didn't know a thing about how to talk to us about college or any of the planning. And so part of it was, I mean, she graduated top of her class the year that I quit. And she was floundering, and, you know, she'd gone to community college a little bit. She actually went full-time nights while she was still a senior and racked up a bunch of credits and did with good grades. So when I transferred, I was afraid to move. Mm-hmm. Small town kid, anxious person, sure. Afraid to move, but I wanted to move really bad. I wanted to like go off to this new school that offers this other degree that I want to get. And so I talked her into going with me. And she has always been a student. We're very different. She's very introverted. She's kind of a quiet person and always been very bookish. And I learned a lot from her about how to be a good student. She knew a lot about it. And I would even come to her and ask her, how did you master that? What technique did you use? Wait, how did you know to do that? You know, I would just ask her stuff. And then it occurred to me, oh, well, and I can ask students in my psychology class too that get the really good grades. So I just really got on this mission of learning more about how I learn and how students that do well learn and what the options are. And that year, my grades just soared. Meditating was also popular then, much as it is now.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I started meditating every day, which is really good for an anxious person. And so that helped me keep the anxiety. And then I read somewhere about that. Now it's an old idea, but it was a new idea then, about over-preparing. And that when you over-prepare, it builds your confidence. It makes you feel calmer because I've got this. I've mastered it. I've spent all these hours and hours. I can rattle the information off. Right. I can go ahead, ask me a question.
Right.
That, you know, it does that for you. So I had learned that strategy. So then my grades just shot right up. I got the first 4.0 I ever got. And probably the biggest compliment, and I kid my sister about this sometimes, she and I were walking across campus together talking about something, and I heard a student go by and say to another student, "Those are the Ross sisters. They're both really, really smart." And I looked at her and I was like, "Oh my God, somebody put me in the league with you." So by the end of that year, that sophomore year, it was so important. We had a support network of friends who were also doing really, really well in college and also going places. Everybody had plans. We were all transferring at the end. And So we applied places. She and I got accepted in both of us got accepted every place we applied, which was also more confidence building, you know, more. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, maybe I really can do this. And independently, we picked the same four-year school to transfer to. So we went to SUNY Binghamton the next year. And at the end of that year, I loved it there. So did she. She was doing great in her major. The department, the psychology department there was really very narrow at that time. Not true anymore. Mm-hmm. This was a lot of years ago. But it was, you know, in the 70s when the hot schools were strictly doing behaviorism. And I don't know where I got it in my head that that wasn't enough, but I decided that wasn't enough. I just felt strongly that there's a lot more to psychology than this, that this isn't the whole thing. And so I transferred at the end of 1 year, the two of us there together. She stayed and I left and I went to New Paltz. And that was the first time now I don't have my sister proofreading my papers because we proofread each other's works. We read papers out loud to each other. We read novels out loud to each other. You know, there, we did have a rich intellectual life, mm-hmm. Which was such a new thing for me. It was thrilling. I couldn't get enough. Once you learn how to learn, and then you're successful, and then you experience more success, and then a teacher pays a little positive attention to you, and classmates that admire want to talk to you and want to hear what you think about things. You know, once that piece kicks in, it's life-altering. The end of that sophomore year, my sister and I both said that we were going to get doctor's degrees. That was a goal after that. Because she really has always loved learning and can't take it far enough. And me, because I had that thing going that I was so much loving learning. But I also had really fallen in love with psychology by then. And at that point in time, you were really limited what you could do in psychology without a doctor's degree. So, and I was pretty sure I wanted to do clinical. And originally I wanted to do clinical with little kids. I switched later on, but that was the original plan. So we're both, that really influenced how we picked four-year schools because we wanted a four-year school that would get us in the doctor's program. I love New Paltz. I left for a couple of years and then came back and did my master's degree there. And that's the first place that hired me as an adjunct teacher. I wanted a doctor's degree in clinical psych really bad. And that's an incredibly competitive field to get a doctor's degree in. That's, you know, 2,000 students apply and they take 10 or 15. The first time I applied, I didn't get in. And so, I got turned down the first time. So I searched again. I applied to some of the same schools I applied to the first time. I applied to some new ones. I spent the year in between thinking consciously about how to make my application stronger. What work experience could I get that would build my vita and make me a stronger candidate? And frankly, that's why initially I accepted a teaching position as an adjunct. I didn't think I would like teaching psychology. I took it because it would look good. It's really the truth. And I was shocked to discover how much I loved it, by the way. That was one of those.
That's great.
Okay. Yeah. Didn't see that one coming. But at any rate, then in the next year, the next round of applications, I got interviewed at only one school. But I went for the interview. And I really liked what I heard, and I liked what I saw there as far as orientation and the clinical orientation of the program, because every program in clinical psych has to name an orientation. So I'd had one lesson, painful lesson in that as an undergrad, so I was really paying attention to that. Mm-hmm. And I also needed someplace that you know, offered funding to students. Mm-hmm. So all my ducks were in a row. I can still remember 1984, my first week on campus, walking across campus from my graduate student assistantship, which was in the graduate school, and walking to the psychology building across campus and just jumping up in the air with joy. I made it. I'm here. I can only reach out if the student reaches first, because I'm not a clinician here. I'm a teacher, right, professor. So, but if a student comes to me and says, I'm struggling with this or I'm having this kind of problem, then that opens the door for me to ask about their learning history. And if I hear some things about learning history, I can make some hunches. I can't know.
Right.
I can only make things. And of course, you know, I'm kind of, I present myself a little bit as living proof. No, really, it makes a difference. You know,
well, it does.
It does. So I always tell my Psych 100, Introduction to Psych, on the first day of class, I tell them, and I tell it in two contexts. I tell it to teach them the language of education and to teach them, you know, about what the different degrees are and what they mean and what you have to qualify to, you know, get into the next level and so on. So, you know, we make the run through, you know, I put doctor on the board and I ask them to tell me, you know, what does that mean? And they, oh, you know, that means that you have lots of education. Some students will always say that means you're really smart, and I always laugh at them and say, "Well, maybe, but maybe not."
Maybe,
you know,
right.
You know. I don't know. Not necessarily. Exactly. So I have fun with them with it, but you know. So I do both things. I get to teach them about the language of academe and what all those funny letters after people's names mean, which I think is really important for students to learn in their college experience. That was really important for me to learn in college. I didn't know anything about those things. You know, I didn't know anyone that had a college degree except my teachers in school and the minister at our church. I didn't know anyone else. And I didn't know anything about what the requirements are or any of that. And so I always teach that a little bit. I teach them a little bit about SUNYs. I think New Yorkers take for granted the fact that we have the largest university system in the world in our state.
Yes.
And students are always shocked by that. They don't realize that there are whole countries that have one college. It's really that this is a gem, that this is a wonderful thing. And as a consequence, a greater percentage of New Yorkers are college educated than in contrast to when you look at other states that have fewer resources and therefore less access for everyday people is how I talk about it with students. And I also tell them a little bit about American education system versus the European system. That's all a piece of it. And then after I tell them the whole thing and I've told them my whole story as part of it, I ask them, why am I telling you this? Because I really want them to get, you know, it's certainly not something as gratuitous as trying to puff myself up in front of them, right? It's not that it's not about that. It's about things that have meaning for them.
Yes.
And most of the time, somebody in the room gets it and says, well, if you can do it, that means, and it's like, yeah, that.
Yeah,
and that's exactly where I go. And I make sure I underscore that and tell them, you know, that you can aspire to whatever level of education you choose to. And it's a thing you choose. And then it doesn't happen magically. It's a lot of hard work, but once you learn how to learn and get really good at learning, then learning is so much more fun. And it opens all these doors and opportunities that let you direct your life in ways that you really aren't able to do so without that option of a good education to fall back on, so that if plan A doesn't work out, that's okay. I've got more options.